This episode of Northern Latitudes contains discussions about addiction, substance use, and its impacts on individuals and families. Some content may be distressing for listeners, particularly those with lived experience or those currently struggling. If you or someone you know needs support, please consider reaching out to a trusted resource or helpline in your area. Listener discretion is advised.
Welcome to Northern Latitudes. I'm Bill Ault. Since 2016, almost 50,000 people have died in Canada from drug-related overdoses. Today, we're diving into one of those stories of unimaginable loss, profound love, and an unyielding belief that things can be better. Scott Oak is an award-winning journalist and a familiar face and voice to Canadians, having been part of some of Canada's greatest Olympic moments and a regular on Hockey Night in Canada. But beyond his career in front of the camera lies a deeply personal and poignant story, one he shares in his powerful new book, For the Love of a Son. Thanks for joining us, Scott.
My pleasure, Bill. Good to be with you.
Tell me about Bruce. Let's start with Bruce.
Bruce is our beautiful firstborn son. He was a precocious child, wicked sense of humor, had everything going for him, as any family would look at their baby and think, the world is his oyster. He could be anything. And Bruce could have been. As he got older, he became an argumentative teenager. In, I think, around the age of 8 or 9, he was diagnosed with ADHD, attention deficit hyperactivity disorder, which made him ripe for taking chances. And that obviously had something to do with his descent into substance abuse or drug addiction. And it was a tragic journey in the end. Last 4 or 5 years of his life were that tragic cycle of active addiction, recovery, relapse, until in March of 2011, we got the call that no parent should ever get, and there would be no more attempts at recovery. And Bruce had lost his battle with addiction. He died of an overdose in Calgary. And, summarized his life there, I guess, and his 25 years. But his life, I would want to point out to everybody, was about more than his addiction.
Yeah, I think as parents that experience this, I think that's the one thing we want people to remember more than anything, that our child was more than just their addiction. And you went through the rehab process many, many times. What compelled you to think that there was a better way of doing than what you had experienced with Bruce?
Well, it was the education we got through Bruce's journey that is responsible for the Bruce Oak Recovery Center and what will soon become the Ann Oak Family Recovery Center. It's an education, obviously, that no parent would ever want to get, but it happened to us, and Bruce had had the best year of his addicted life at a long-term treatment center in Calgary called Simon House. He stayed there for a year. It worked the first time. He was there twice. First time he stayed for a year. It worked for that 1 year because it was long-term treatment at no cost, and we could see the benefits of it. And so when Bruce died, we took on as our goal to bring long-term treatment at no cost to Winnipeg and to Manitoba. And we've done that with the Bruce Oak Recovery Center. And as I mentioned a moment ago, we're working now on the Ann Oak Family Recovery Center, which will become reality as soon as possible.
When did you decide that you needed to write a book about this story?
I had never planned to write a book. What happened was I got a call from an agent one day who wanted to know if I'd be interested in writing a book of my career. And my answer to that was no, a flat out no, because I'll write a book about my career when every person I know in the world is dead. So phone me back in, I don't know, 2058 if I'm still alive. But to be serious, I did say no, because as I said to him, there are probably 10, 15 guys I can name off the top of my head who've had more prolific careers than me who haven't written books about theirs. And so I'm not going to subject anybody to a book about mine. And the conversation changed to Bruce's journey and the recovery center. And I did say that I would have an appetite to tell that story. So that was the birth of the book.
Did writing the book help continue the process of dealing with the emotions and the experiences you've gone through? Did it bring stuff back? Did it help?
Well, of course. And if the question is, was it cathartic? Was it a relief to write the book? Not in the least. It was a very difficult exercise to write the book, to relive Bruce's journey, especially the last, say, 4 or 5 years of his life. Not the early parts. That's fine. Bruce was a typical kid and had a lot going for him, as I said, up until the age of, I suppose, 17 or 18, all fine as far as memories go. But reliving the last 4 or 5 years of his life, that horror journey, the cycle that I talked about a moment ago through the written word, was very, very difficult. Previously, if I was to think of something that Bruce had done, one of his episodes, one of his shenanigans, I would think about that in isolation and go back to whatever it was I was doing. This book lays everything out in chronological order. So it was difficult to write, and it's not easy for me to read.
There's a sentence in the preface, actually, that got me right off the bat, but it's funny. I sometimes find myself trying not to think of him, because if I do, it's easy to break down completely. From your experience, do you have any advice for other families that are going through this?
Two things. First of all, trying not to think of him applies pretty much when there is a ceremony of gratitude at the Bruce Oak Recovery Center or its birthday night, and guys who have achieved 1 year of sobriety are getting their jet sweaters. That's when I have to fight the thought that, why can't this be Bruce? Because that will reduce me to a puddle. Otherwise, I think of Bruce every day. And why wouldn't I? He was our beautiful firstborn son, and things didn't turn out the way that any family would want them to. But still, he was our son, and he's never far from my mind. As for advice, I have a policy on when it comes to giving advice, and that is I don't give any. People can read the book and take from it what they please. If it helps them in any way, then I'm happy about that. I'm gratified, and that tells me there was a purpose in the book. But I'm not. You've read the book, so you see in the book that I don't give out advice, and advice is way outside my wheelhouse. Leave that to the professionals. I'm often asked by people now that the book is gaining a lot of traction. I'll get emails from people saying, "What should I do in this situation?" I have conversations with people that tell me what to do here. My answer is always the same. I'm not giving advice. If you're dealing with addiction in your family or whatever, I'll tell you what I'll do. I'll put you in touch with somebody from the recovery center. But I'm not a professional. I have not gone through recovery. I don't pretend to know what it's all about. I mean, I have some knowledge from my time spent at the recovery center, but if you're asking for advice, you're asking the wrong person.
Fair enough. So one of the interesting things about the recovery center is that you've modeled it on a model that sees former addicts themselves doing a lot of the work. How important is that to the success of the recovery center?
Well, I use the simple analogy of, playing in the NHL. If your coach hasn't played, and some guys can get away with this, but there's always a threat that if your coach hasn't played and things are going bad, you may turn around and say to him, "What would you know about it? You've never been out there. You've never played." I don't think it's far different in the world of recovery. We have 4 counselors at the Bruce Oak Recovery Center, and among them, I think they have a combined, 90, 85 to 90 years of recovery. And it's important because they will never ask anyone in their groups of men seeking recovery, trying to get their lives back. They will never ask any of them to do anything in pursuit of recovery and sobriety that they have not done themselves. So I think it's important that those who are trying to help people achieve sobriety not only have talked the talk, but they've walked the walk. That's one of the reasons for the success of the Bruce Oak Recovery Center.
And the center itself was a long time coming. I remember reading the sections that you had to deal with to get it to actually move forward through the different levels of government. It's an incredible story of, I don't know what to call it, endurance, I guess, at the end. Has just the experience of that changed any of your perspective on how hard it is to get things done?
Well, when you're dealing with government bureaucracy, it's hard to get anything done. But we had to deal with that. We also had to deal with a neighborhood that didn't want the Bruce Oak Recovery Center in it. And I get that. When you're trying to establish a recovery center in the middle of a residential neighborhood, you have to expect pushback because people don't know what they don't know. And most often what they don't know is there's a massive difference between active addiction and recovery. Active addiction is ugly. Our family knows it better than any, or certainly as well as most. Active addiction revolves around drug-seeking behavior. Recovery's at the other end of the spectrum. It's beautiful because those seeking it are focused on one thing, and that is their sobriety. So we had to conduct a dignified, is how I describe it, educational campaign that explained to residents of the area that the men of the Bruce Oak Recovery Center would be good neighbors. They had nothing to fear from them, and that's exactly how it's turned out. So that was a battle on one front. The second front was government bureaucracy, and we spent 2 years at City Hall trying to get the property, 1 year to actually get it and another year to get it rezoned. How I look back on all of it is that it was worth every minute of it. It felt like torture at the time. We probably went through 20 to 30 stop signs, every one at which we could have quit, but we didn't. And I think of, you know, the backlash we got from the residents and some politicians at the civic level who were against it. It was difficult, but every time we were in the news, we got support from people who rallied, either donated to the cause or wrote a letter or whatever. So all of those battles put us very much in the public consciousness, and I think accelerated the project. It gave us the kind of publicity that we couldn't have bought. And if we hadn't had it, despite how uncomfortable it was at the time, who knows if we would have got the Bruce Oak Recovery Center built. So that's how I look back on it. I think, you know, in the end, it was a blessing. You know, the old adage, what doesn't kill you makes you stronger. And that's how it turned out for us.
What's the relationship like now with the neighborhood?
It's very good. Even the most vociferous opponents of the Bruce Oak Recovery Center, when we were trying to get it off the ground and when we were getting it built, have become supporters of the place to the extent that some actually volunteer there. People have come to realize that what's there now is far better than what was there before, which was a boarded up hockey arena that was dark at night. And this is not to disparage the neighborhood, but nothing good goes on around large, dark buildings at night. So the Bruce Oak Recovery Center has, in fact, made the neighborhood better. And I think most clear thinking residents acknowledge that.
Now, stepping away from the Bruce Oak Recovery Center, tell me a little bit about the Ann Oak Recovery Center. What's all that all about?
When we were getting the Bruce Oak Recovery Center off the ground, it was always part of our plan that when it was up and running with sustainable funding and successful results, that we would turn our attention to women and their need for long-term treatment and recovery. You may know from reading the book that the Bruce Oak Recovery Center is gender specific, because it is our belief that it's not a good idea to mix men and women together in long-term recovery. They're at their most vulnerable, and it doesn't matter what you do, barbed wire fences, tasers, whatever. I mean, I'm exaggerating, you'd never do that, but even extreme measures like that cannot keep men and women apart when they're at their most vulnerable. And pretty soon the conversation between them becomes, we don't need this, let's go, we can do this together. Right. Those relationships are almost always tragic. So we have, because we're a not-for-profit operation, we're a registered charity, we have the luxury of being gender specific. But at the same time, we have, through our foundation, supported the recovery of women at a facility in Winnipeg called Tamarack on an annual basis. We give them a sizable grant to ensure that women have a chance at recovery there. So we've always acknowledged that responsibility, but we wanted to do it, you know, in a bigger way, to give women the same opportunity that the men have at Bruce Oak. And so that is the whole concept of the Ann Oak Family Recovery Center. We have a gorgeous plot of property in the south end of Winnipeg with the support of Wabkinew, Premier Wabkinew and his government. And they accessed it or acquired it for us. We had a groundbreaking ceremony there in September. We have a capital campaign that is working on a soft basis right now. We're raising, have to raise $25 million. We're already halfway there. We hope to start construction late summer. Bruce Oak, or the Ann Oak Family Recovery Center, will be a larger facility than is Bruce Oak, because it will allow women to have their children with them as they get healthy. A lot of women are reluctant to go into recovery because they're afraid they're going to lose their kids. So at the Ann Oak Family Recovery Center, families can be kept together. That's that's a whole new concept in the world of recovery, and we're looking forward to that. And so the Anoka Family Recovery Center will, we know, will be just as successful as is Bruce Oak.
The book is called For the Love of a Son. It's published by Simon Schuster here in Canada. I highly recommend it as a read, not just for people that have dealt with this personally, but because it's a really important story at this time and this place in this country. Thank you, Scott.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me on.
Rest, child. Rest, child, your race is run, a battle fought, yet never won. Rest, child, no more the chase, no need to flee. Stand still now, finally free. The demons clung despite your will, yet led you to a silence still. Endless days of haunted strife, yield now to peace beyond this life. Those you've left will grieve and pray, but know you found your rest today. Rest, child. Your joy, your light, your laughter bright will echo softly in the night. In hearts and minds, you'll always stay a love untouched by time's decay. Rest, child. This peace you've earned. Thank you for listening to Northern Latitudes. Don't forget to subscribe and leave a review on your favorite platform to stay updated on future episodes. For even more content, including all the Northern Latitudes podcasts, my photography, and Northern Latitudes events, go to northernlatitudes.ca. Theme music and sound logo produced by John Sanfilippo of Soundwise in Kingston, Ontario. Closing music is called Parting by Lost Ghosts. The poem Rest Child was written by me following the death of my youngest daughter due to an accidental fentanyl overdose. To leave a comment or suggestion, email me at podcast@northernlatitudes.ca. Until next time, I'm Bill Olt.